Thank you for joining us on History FM Radio on LiveParanormal.com and History FM. From paranormal to the unexplained history, it all happens here. Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in live interactive chat 24/7 with our radio show hosts and other like-minded people on www.liveparanormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by full interactive media. Stop by now and join in on the fun.
Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining us on History FM Radio on LiveParanormal.com and History.FM. From paranormal to the unexplained history, it all happens here. Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in live interactive chat 24/7 with our radio show hosts and other like-minded people on www.liveparanormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by full interactive media. Stop by now and join in on the fun.
Welcome to Beyond Belief, the show that will bring you information that's different, thought-provoking, just might stretch the limits of believability. I'm your host, Les Blaise, and I'm co-founder of Opus, the Organization for Paranormal Understanding and Support, and the director of abduction research for MUFON International, and I welcome you tonight to a really, I think, very interesting show. Tonight's guest is George Libuono. George is the author of a book called The Alien Mind. George's book quotes human contactees and informative aliens in a startling new exploration of the thoughts and assumptions of our extraterrestrial neighbors. He will discuss how our location near the edge of a large galaxy supercluster has important implications for our interaction with aliens. Alien Mind discusses the abundant evidence to date for how aliens think and how they behave, their attitudes towards humans, alien science, and how humans can both detect and identify different types of aliens and their energy networks. It places the aliens we know about in a large multi-galactic context and introduces two new categories of aliens, megapopulations and hyper-advanced aliens, who claim to have originated billions of years ago. Well, George, welcome.
Thank you.
How are you doing tonight?
Oh, just fine, thank you.
Well, very good, very good. Well, I must admit that in reading that, it piqued so many different buttons on me as far as what you have found out and what you're going to present tonight that I don't want to waste much time, but getting to that topic, but I got to ask you, George, how did you come about? Let's give a little background on who George is and then how you came to write this book.
Well, I in college I studied history, and then in graduate study I was looking at the underside of U.S. history, and I started working as a writer. and have done some reporting. Investigative topics are my favorite. And what happened was I was asked to do a review of a book at a publisher for a book of stories that I'd done, asked me to review a book about alien psychology. And when I looked at the book and finished reading it, I was thinking, you know, this is 1998. In my own life, contact had begun in 1995, quite unexpectedly. I'd previously been skeptical of contact because I thought the speed of light prohibited any aliens arriving here in any reasonable fashion. And then 3 years after that, I'm asked to review a book about alien psychology, and it didn't allow for anything faster than the speed of light. It didn't allow for aliens to arrive here in the kind of ships that the contactees, and also the weird things people are seeing in actually UFO cases. It didn't allow for that, and I thought, I've been doing this for 3 years now, contact, and it was ongoing, and it was challenging me to actually develop a critique. I was actually surprised. It seemed as though, I imagine that the aliens that contacted me, and I know it sounds strange to some listeners, I imagine they probably thought that this person is going to report what he finds out, and since he's one who looks to the underside of his story and the dirty, ugly details, that I might get out information that some other people might have been reluctant to do. And that's mm-hmm. how it began.
Okay. Now, have you had any experiences of your own with regard to alien contact?
To tell you the truth, honestly, I am actually talking to a woman who does regression research because I have little doubt that there may actually have been some abduction in my life. Obviously, I don't have the conscious recall, but I can't just say for a fact. But have I had... I haven't been one person who's seen much or in the way of UFOs, but as you'll see as we begin to talk about this subject, I have seen things that obviously, you'll see, things have happened. Yeah, and what I want to say is this, this subject, when it comes along, for example, I think when we talk about aliens and beyond this planet, you have to sort of stop for a moment. Think about your life. Just sort of set it aside. It's as if you have to step outside of yourself and see yourself, all of humankind, in all of its history. Because this subject, this kind of interaction with non-humans and very advanced technologies and their different ways is so important and is going to so change human society for the rest of human history that you have to look at it in that perspective. Because it's not just something like the World Series or something like the change of seasons. It's an entire change of the paradigm of how humans think and behave and how we will view both ourselves and the rest of the universe.
Well, I think that is absolutely true, George. One of the things that I've posited a number of times is the fact that I think that we're dealing with a force that's always been with us, and that it's sort of an evolutionary process that is an ongoing process, a growth process, if you will. And so there's certainly a lot to be learned. And the points that I mentioned in the intro to your book are just absolutely fascinating. So why don't you kick it off and start where you normally start, because I know you've done a number of presentations around the country here, and certainly here in Northern California. So
what I would say is this. First off, and probably for listeners, this is very important, and they may not know this, that about 15 months ago, astronomers, I think it was NASA, along with JPL, they put up a satellite called Kepler, and it was looking off at 156,000 stars in the Milky Way, right in our neighborhood, only about 3,000 light years away, which is very close, because the Milky Way is 140,000 120,000 light years across, depending on what you include in it. And looking in that area, they were watching for little planets to go right in front of stars and dim the light. They found many that look like they could be right about Earth-sized. As a matter of fact, there's so many that you look at the picture of them in that sort of plot, and the ones that are colored blue for Earth-like, it looks like blue lights on a Christmas tree. There are that many of them, or on a holiday sort of presentation. And what JPL, which actually tracks the space shuttle and tracks many of the satellites and missions to other planets, is now estimating is that there are about 2 billion Earth-like planets in the Milky Way alone. So we're not talking about the rest of the universe. We're talking about this one galaxy. There are billions of galaxies. This galaxy has about 100 and 150 billion stars in it, possibly more. And JPL is estimating that 2 billion of those are like this planet and may have life on them, not just Earth-sized like Venus, which is not necessarily an Earth-like. So everything has changed. You know, about 2 years ago, many people would have said, oh, well, we see extra planets out there, but nothing that looks like Earth. But even then, everything was changing because planets have been being discovered, and we're seeing such diversity. And the point is that for those who used to say, oh, you know, this stuff is just wacko, it's not possible at all, we're the only ones, scientists don't agree with that. They realize there has to be life out there. And you probably recall Stephen Hawking talking about, well, we might want to be careful about who and what. You know, don't just throw open the door because, you know, I don't know if he was
exactly
thinking in the back of his head. Some of these abduction stories or some of these, you know, some of that, can maybe, you know, like the superpower pretending to be a superpower comes along, and maybe they're not going to just do whatever we say we want to do, you know, that kind of thing. But
mm-hmm.
what I want to paint is there's a big picture to look at. And the big picture is not just our little corner of the Milky Way, not just our neighborhood. And I think the worst thing we could do right now is to think, aha, you know, we it's all about us and what we want to do, and it's all about our first contacts, or that's all there is to it, you know, because it's not just the first contacts that we've had, because some of those contacts, I would say, have not been agreeable. They're stories of abductions, people taken in different places, obviously your listeners know, some of whom are from different parts of the world, could never have spoken to each other, and even were talking about this before these kind of stories were out on an internet. And they talk about the same procedures, similar-looking aliens, and that kind of thing is going on. And you know, I don't think we can assume that all aliens in our neighborhood would be like that, nor could we assume that all aliens, of course, are going to be like us, because obviously, aliens have a more advanced technology. They have a larger awareness. They know about, imagine this new sort of concept for us, kind of the politics or the mix of one planet with another planet, how they get along, how they share their science. I mean, I would assert that similar to the influence of Greece on Rome, you see different societies affecting each other. Our society is already affected by extraterrestrials in ways that some people would not even be aware of.
Well, I tell you that's a you know a thought that I think it needs to be spread among our scientists to a greater degree. Unfortunately, you know, some of them you know still espouse the fact that well, it's not possible to go faster than the speed of light, so therefore there's no way that these people can get here. But then, if you can talk about space-time continuum and bending that and manipulating that through wormholes or what have you, you know, these types of things, you know, quantum physics and everything else where you can be two places at the same time. I mean, I think there's a lot that we certainly don't understand yet, and there's a lot.
What some people don't understand is they think, oh, you know, nothing goes faster than light. Well, you know, it's, I'm going to say this in a different way. You could say it like this. In 1928, scientists determined that quantum theory and everything that they were looking at, all the tests, showed that nothing inside the atom, all those little particles, none of them were concrete. None of them were. They were all thingless. They weren't thing-like. There was no concrete, no solid aspect to them. They could be in more than one place, moving around. As a matter of fact, Michio Kaku quotes that the electron, if you look at it, is in every possible place, but all at the same time. It's just bizarre. I mean, the physics of what we're looking at is obviously, and for example, you know, if you say nothing can go faster than light, I'd say, wait, stop for a minute, because maybe in a sense nothing can go faster than light, that sort of non-concrete quality. Maybe it can resonate in effect. And actually, you know, some scientists have said, well, Einstein, it was an assumption. It was a postulate. It was not proven that there is no possibility to exceed light speed. And, of course, in the context we're talking about, we see alien craft that are doing things that look very much like they're exceeding that kind of old Einstein limit. And to even have arrived here, it would suggest that they might be doing so. And certainly, too, the physics of what we're seeing, the craft and what reports by counties, whistleblowers, even, for example, Corso. Philip Corso was a colonel in the Pentagon who said he worked on copying alien technology starting in 1961, and he had actually seen that looked like to him an alien in 1947, at, right after Roswell, being shipped to Wright-Patman Air Force Base, Wright Air Force Base in Ohio. I think it's near Dayton, Ohio. And Corso said that, you know, he kept his mouth shut, didn't want to even talk about it. It was so weird. He knew it would destroy his career if he mentioned what he'd seen in 47. In 61, they pull him back into this program and ask him, being an electronics whiz, to help take this technology and give it out to corporations so they can copy it. And not necessarily say, hey, we got this from a downed alien crack, which is not really, you know, you can't really do that too easily in the corporate world. And so they made copies of this technology. Corso was saying that it appeared to the, in even as early as 1947-48, U.S. military scientists thought that the alien craft were folding gravity around the craft, and hence the craft would look like it's invisible. You wouldn't see it in a sense. And it's a new, whole new kind of science, and people talk about, look, it has to do with kind of like the old Tesla science, which isn't so old after all, or B-Field Brown. I mean, these are names some people don't know what I'm talking about, but it's called gravitics. It's a new kind of science. Some people call it scalar electromagnetism. Others say, oh, it's zero-point energy. And I think I'm just pulling this out of the air, and this is off-the-wall stuff. A scientist who just won the Nobel Prize, his name is Rees, for the dark energy expansion of the universe, increasing its acceleration away from itself.
Right.
Somebody asked him, he said, well, what do you think dark energy is? Because 70% of the universe would be this dark energy. It's a big, huge mystery. Obviously, we don't know everything, of course. You know, the Einstein limit, if you only know what about 5% of what the universe actually is, and you might not want to assume the Einstein limit is everything that there is. So Rees said, well, he figured that the best guess at this point is that dark energy is something is what maybe what we call zero point energy. Again, same thing as this gravitic, electrogravitic, or what the alien craft, of course, what I was saying is folding around the alien craft for possibly faster than light or instantaneous movement across space. Or some people call it electrogravity, zero point energy, and you know that scalar energy. They call it that too.
Exactly.
And the thing that the Nobel Prize winner says, we just don't know how it relates, how it, you know, it compares to our normal electromagnetism or energy that goes out light and that kind of stuff. But some people say, actually, we do. And I'll give you an example. One man named Tom Bearden is a Navy colonel, worked in the U.S. Navy, and he apparently said he'd worked on systems and was aware, while apparently, you know, all the implications are that was while he was on duty, these kind of scalar systems, some possibly being considered for weapons uses, obviously for other kind of technological uses. And he says, well, you know, we do know the relationship between this zero-point energy, or he calls it electromagnetic gravity, which is a kind of an artificial gravity. If you're wondering what does that mean? Just think kind of artificial gravity, and we'll call it gravitics for short, not just the gravity of the Earth, but it's this kind of energy that's kind of resonating out in the universe, but very fast. And what Bearden says is he says that if you take electromagnetism, meaning light or microwaves, any of those, you know, those kind of light waves, visible or non-visible spectrum, and you send them so that they're going exactly towards each other along the same line, and they converge, and so the rolling hump of one light wave is exactly opposite the rolling hump in another light wave. It's like it's that the waves cancel out. And so you'd see one wave going one direction, the other one going the other direction. They meet in the exact same spot, and it flatlines in a sense. But the energy is still looking for a place to go. It canceled out, but it's called, scientists call this a standing wave. Well, Bearden says this. Tom Bearden says, and he works with this kind of technology, all you have to do is just slightly vary the energy, just slightly. The potential, he calls it the potential, that means the voltage. It's just the energy level. You vary that a little bit, and it bleeds into this new electrogravity, which is a kind of an artificial gravity. And it's a weird new kind of science. And what it can do is, well, it's very different. And Corso was hinting that that's how the Roswell alien craft worked. And now, I know that some people are thinking, yeah, well, you know, all the stuff in labs and people with these weird gizmos like Frankenstein technology. But it's not the case. I would assert that the most important aspect of contact and what we're seeing in abduction and human interactions and whistleblowers, everything about aliens is not weapons. It is not the technology. It is the science of mind, the new science of mind that aliens essentially exemplify. And here's what I'm going to assert, and I know for some people this is going to sound so weird that they're going to wonder if I'm just making this up, and I'm not the only person who's saying this. Other people say this, they do this from direct experience, and I do too. And it's the following. It's that this kind of energy can be produced just in your very own mind, in your very own head. And it's essentially it's as though your mind sort of kind of half rotate, half flip your mind's awareness, and it converges energy. And at first, you know, you don't have to have technology. It doesn't have to have a computer and an oscilloscope to do this. You just converge the energy, and your way of varying that energy is so very slight that here's what it feels like. It feels like it's converging in a sense, but you do it fast. It's just in a snap, and it feels like your awareness expands way out. And it's as though in the dark of your mind, you're feeling as though you're actually way out there in an expanded sort of bubble of space-time. And scientists say, for example, Dr. Eldon Bird, a naval weapons laboratory scientist, said, well, you know, the weird thing about this scalar, this kind of energy, when you converge it, it cancels out and you slightly vary it, and your brain can contour it in just 1,000 different ways, you know, big, small curves, and it, focusing in front, back, everywhere, all the way around. Eldon Bird said, well, the weird thing about it is that it takes no time for the scalar energy or sort of resonance to go from one point to a very, very distant point, just anywhere in the universe. Now, some people think that's totally bizarre. How could that happen? Again, it's not a linear sort of light wave. So you've converged the energy. It's sort of cycling down as though it goes down. Imagine going down like into the nucleus, and the nucleus is like it's a little thing that tucks down somewhere slightly deeper in the universe where black holes tuck down deeper, and so does gravity. And these things, they cycle inward, and they can resonate among each other. And at the same time, you're sort of expanding your awareness. And it's not like the speed of light, you're going out to your awareness to the moon. It's like, boom, your awareness can be out beyond the solar system in
sure.
an instant. And some people think this is weird. Well, Stephen Greer says he does the same thing. Remote viewers say they do the same thing. Military-trained, CIA-trained people. And aliens, I would assert, they do this as a matter of habit, a matter of course. And for them, it's not the what you may have read if you read the books by U.S. military remote viewers. Instead, it's just fast. It's instant. It's a matter of habit. They do it. They have faster shifts of mind. It's more subtle. Imagine it's, you know, all this stuff doesn't require a huge blast of energy. All of a sudden, you're bathing the whole world or everything with all this light like you're some sort of, you know, glowing Tesla bulb. Instead, it's kind of as though in the dark of your mind, you just, it happens, it's more faded. But it's not so sort of concrete. It's more airy, more spatial sort of a feeling to it. And, you know, people can do this. It takes a little training. I talk about it in my book, actually, and the point being is that aliens do this all of the time. And they have technology that can amplify brain waves, and their technology can communicate with, can send information to their minds, and they can also send it back and forth. Many listeners probably heard about, you know, the alien's hand sort of palm print on a craft at Roswell or some sort of such a thing, or some sort of an alien craft either there or in other accounts.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Or the headband around, you know, Korsel wrote about the headband around the alien's head. And
right.
Even Korsel suggested that, guess what? They appeared to be directing the craft using their mind energy. It's called psychotronic technology. Psycho like in the mind, tronic
right.
for, you know, the tech.
Mm-hmm.
But so their mind interactions are going on like that. They can record the information, they can send it back and forth, and they can communicate across great distances and as a whole group. So here's the bottom line is this. It's not really the bottom line, but say you meet an alien. So you're walking, you were just whatever, you happen to encounter an alien. They're not going to be so individualistic like some humans are. It's not about, you know, what kind of beer you drink and what you want and what kind of, you know, upholstery you like in your car to get for you. It's more about the social identity. First thing is everything is transparent in a sense. You know, minds can share information. There's no, it's a scientist here in the United States, his name is Russell Targ, who trained hundreds in the CIA during the Cold War to do this actual kind of remote viewing of things far away and distant, even in time. He says the big secret is that there are no secrets. And that's how it is among aliens. You know, it's not that everything becomes known. You can still have your own sort of subtle ways. But in this larger community of interactions among aliens, the identity is more kind of social. It's as though they begin with inner thoughts. We will do the following. We this, we that. Because it's included in that sense where, you know, among humans it's usually I this, I that, I want something. And, you know, it's more individualistic. And I think that's one of the big changes we'll be going through very quickly.
Well, you know, it's fascinating, you know, when we try to understand, quote unquote, the aliens, and you know, are they abducting people physically? Are they manipulating time and space in order to do that? What's their agenda? You know, is there an agenda, or are they like, you know, what we do with dolphins, you know, when we're experimenting and pulling them out of the ocean and tagging them and throwing them back in? You know, there's a lot. What are your thoughts about their attitudes and perhaps their agenda?
Well, I see a pattern. You know, for example, abductees, when they speak from, and it's not all from having been hypnotized to talk about what they remembered from, you know, in the subconscious mind. Instead, some people had waking experiences where they weren't just taken out of bed and it reportedly floated through a wall. And they say that, you know, they've seen sometimes the small gray aliens with taller gray aliens, or sometimes with the hooded sort of a different kind of alien standing around, and these people are numbed out laying on a table, and it's a painful procedure they're going through. And they sometimes see them with the human-looking, sort of Nordic-looking aliens. And so we see a variety of different aliens, but they seem to be working together as though it's like one alignment for the most part. Obviously, there have been reportedly abductions involving some other aliens, but those seem to have been much, much less. So this one group of aliens seems to have a kind of an agenda of a sort, and it seems to be, as abduction researchers suggest, to do a breeding program to take human reproductive material. Sometimes they reach into young girls as young as age 11 or 12, just fresh into puberty, thinking those are the best eggs and the easiest for their uses. And again, it does not seem to be something that's being done for the good of that 11 or 12-year-old girl being taken up, and it hurts like heck. And there's no anesthesia. She's just numbed out and given a screen memory so she doesn't remember it. And they talk about the pain and the embarrassment and the, you know, it's very, very difficult for them. And it's the reproductive materials are being used to produce hybrids, reportedly. And this is the report of many, many different abductees. And the question is, why the hybrids? If we look at the aliens, some people say, oh, we've heard this from aliens, and they'll say this directly. Some people say, the aliens said the reason they were doing it is because they've been cloning, which is what some aliens will do in order to genetically improve themselves, but they become sort of all the same. It's homogenous. There's no diversity. There's not the rigor that there used to be, that, you know, the new genes and that in the mix. And so they needed our genes for a kind of hardiness, otherwise they would have these health problems. But you look at those aliens, and you see those aliens show up, and they're acting with a bunch of different aliens, who some more advanced than they are, and some with, you know, far, far distant sort of interactions and technology in different populations already as part of their kind of orbit or their circle of, I guess you could call it, it's like an alien alignment in a sense. And certainly those aliens have genes in abundance. There would be like entire catalogs of genes from different types of aliens, genes they've collected from different places. They don't need human genes. I just don't believe them. It looks more as though they're taking the genes for use for their breeding program hybrids. And the question is, what are they going to use those hybrids for? Because in the third generation, you know, the first hybrid between a human and an alien is called, just a hybrid. It looks very alien. Say you mix a gray with a small gray alien with a human. Mm-hmm. It doesn't look very human. Very thin hair, big eyes, you know. You would never think that's a human. But if you breed that or mix it or, you know, combine that two more times in the third generation, it's called a late stage hybrid, and they do look very human. You could insert those in human lineups. And guess what? That's according to Robert Dean, who worked in NATO's SHAPE headquarters in Europe. He said he saw documents about how there were human-looking aliens who were in some sort of interaction program, were actually working with some people in some military installations on this planet already. And the concern was that they could be, for example, Korsler suggested, other people suggest they could be in the White House and you wouldn't know the difference. And of course, we heard Douglas MacArthur. You know, everybody knows who General MacArthur was.
Sure.
In World War II, and when he gave, now he gave a speech, and he was warning, saying, you know, the next war is going to be a war with some other galactic power. And he didn't make this speech when he was at a bar talking to, you know, some other people who had gripe against the government. This is the speech that he gave as his farewell at West Point Military Academy. So, you know, you wonder, what was he talking about here? You know, this is, it sounds like there's something going, there was something going on, and he was talking, obviously it was an allusion, a reference to aliens without being too direct about it. Which, you know, it's the point being is that abductions look as though it's not always, well, for human good. It looks like it's being done more for the purpose of those aliens. And the question is, are they trying to gain influence here? Is it about resources? I mean, why are they here in such big number? You know, why were they doing it? Is, of course, I thought it was being done as in stealth. What were they trying to hide? And,
exactly,
you know,
exactly. And, George, on that note, let me pause here for a moment. We got to do a little commercial, and then we'll come back and talk a little bit more about the aliens as far as their mega populations and then the hyper advanced aliens, and maybe get a little bit more into your last thought there. So hold on and we'll be right back.
Thank you for joining us on History FM Radio on LiveParanormal.com and History.fm. From paranormal to the unexplained history, it all happens here. Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in live interactive chat 24/7 with our radio show hosts and other like-minded people on www.liveparanormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by full interactive media. Stop by now and join in on the fun.
Okay, we're back, and I'm your host, Les Velez, and this is Beyond Belief. And tonight our guest is George Libuono, and who's written a book called The Alien Mind. And he's actually blowing my mind tonight, so quite a bit of information here that we've been going over. And we do have a call in line. It's 619-639-4606. So if you have any questions, please give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. So, George, talk a little bit now, you know, where we left off there where we were talking about why are they, you know, developing these hybrids? What's their purpose? You know, is it something nefarious, evil, or is it for perhaps saving our population after some catastrophe or something? Who knows? What do you think?
Well, that's the question. I would say this. You know, if you ask them, they would say, you know, remember, they have mind interactions. Some of them have been absorbed into this larger, in the case of the larger abducting group that, or groups that we apparently see, they're told that, you know, this is for the good of humankind. It's also for the good of our effort, and our effort is to go out and move out and do whatever they do. They think it's about technology, about improving humankind, and about helping humankind not be so destructive. But some of it is also about their heavy presence in our area. And the question is whether they belong here, those particular aliens. Now, I'm going to turn to a case. It's called the case of Philip Kropp. Philip Kropp is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist from the L.A. Times, talked about a large megapopulation that is the first person to really document, apparently, in waking. He was taken for a few days, and he was taken awake. He went up, and he's, you know, this is a very mainstream, a relatively conservative journalist who won a Pulitzer, and he was asked by aliens, the aliens who work with and apparently are like the older, probably much larger population, the Greys, reportedly 500 trillion, and they don't even come, they told Kropp, from the Milky Way. They're from a galaxy 14 million light years away. Now, to put that in perspective, there are about 150 galaxies of various sizes that are closer than that one that's 14 million light years away. So it means they're not really native to this galaxy. As a matter of fact, according to them, neither are the Greys. The Greys came, according to them, from the large Magellanic Cloud originally, which is a satellite galaxy of the Milky Way. So the question is, why would they be here and telling so many people that they're part of, when you hear this term, in a lot of things you'll read, some sort of a federation. It almost sounds like a Star Trek term. It almost sounds like it's
right.
framed mm-hmm. to make people think, you know, no problem, that's how it Star Trek is, or Star Wars, Star Trek, yeah, is. And the question, it sounds as though they're trying to sort of ease themselves in sideways and act as though they actually belong here. And if they're not from here, they may actually be in this area, for example, if, you know, I've actually interacted with aliens of that sort. Now, speaking from personal experience, I have zero doubt about Kropp, about what he's saying. My only doubt would be about whether or not the aliens that he interacted with, whether they may have fudged a little bit about what they said, because they didn't want to reveal the embarrassing details. And that's what I dig into. And that's what I encourage other people to dig into when they interact with aliens. Don't just be the passive idiot, in a sense.
Right.
They tell you whatever they want, and you don't bother to check and explore. You know, because, for example, I'll give you an example. The aliens called the so-called Pleiadians that people talk about, and they look like humans, and they supposedly came from the Pleiades, or that's the term they use. But there's a problem with that, and that problem is that the Pleiades are only 130 million years old. They're stars in a group, and no life is going to evolve in 130 million years. The question is, where do they really come from? Why did they try to pass off a fake story? Well, back mm-hmm. to this big megapopulation, they called themselves the Verdants because their planet was green and verdant, and it almost sounds like an article of their propaganda that they didn't destroy their planet, as reportedly some other aliens, they and other aliens, say actually did. Well, the abductions appear to look, I would suggest that the abductions of a group like that, who apparently absorbed the Greys, were a much younger, a relatively small population, of much less significance. They may be trying to expand for trading purposes. It's also a propaganda thing in their own society, their science. These are the so-called Verdants are sexuals, while the Greys are cloning, non-sexuals. And there's a kind of a push, in a sense, within that kind of alignment to reduce population, to expand, to get more resources, and that may be what they're doing here, to reduce population of other populations, not necessarily their own population. See, they're sexuals, and the Greys are non-sexuals, and they can always turn around and say, for example, to other more advanced or larger alien interactions, say, you know, what we're doing is we're out essentially deactivating these some offensive sexual populations, like the humans. You know, maybe we could go into humans if we got them to clone and our hybrids became predominant, then, you know, it wouldn't be long before we might have unoffensive non-sexuals who, by the way, work for us. And, you know, they're expanding in what they're doing. And I think that that's what you have to look for in some megapopulations. Now, the irony is, I think in the Milky Way, it looks as though the megapopulations in our own galaxy they're either smaller and more modest in size, or it doesn't mean they're not very advanced. For example, the so-called Verdants are about, according to Kropp, 229 million years technologically more advanced than we are. They had our kind of technology that long ago. But if you think about it, the universe is 13.7 billion years old at least. It could be much older than that, you know, if our idea of the Big Bang is not necessarily the ultimate
mm-hmm.
beginning. And if the universe is only as old as our mainstream sort of theory suggests, there could be aliens easily in this galaxy in number in a whole variety of different places. Remember those 2 billion different planets that could be like Earth. They could some of them could be billions of years old as a population. Others, you know, maybe 100 or a few hundred million years old. And so the Verdants would not be the ultimate everything, you know. But we sort of have to infer that the aliens in our galaxy are more modest and less intrusive than the so-called Verdants and the Greys, who seem to work in alignment with them. See, I'm looking for a larger overview, and I think in order to understand aliens, you have to also expand your awareness of the universe, and that's just not one sort of blob jump out. You look at the maps of how galaxies are and how they tend to group up into superclusters of galaxies, and in my own life, you know, I said I was a contactee, and it began with a challenge, and I was provoked in a sense to eventually develop a critique of the Greys and the abduction that was going on with them. But, you know, this is I, and it's getting arduous. It was a long, and it's a lot of interaction in order to even get to that point. I was just awed and, you know, flummoxed. I didn't know what to say or think when contact first began because I was so awed by the intelligence of aliens.
When did the contact begin for you?
1995, and so it's been about 15 years. But
how old were you then?
Well, I'm 56 now, so 1995. Okay. I guess I would have been, born in 55, 95.
Mm-hmm.
I would have been, I guess that's 40 years old.
Yeah, and that's generally speaking late.
Yeah, late in life.
Most people,
I think, you know, in a sense it's good because I was more mature.
Yeah.
I don't know how I would have handled it when I were younger. I suppose it would have been a real wake up call for me. It would have really caused me to rethink everything. Would have,
mm-hmm.
I would have shed a few pounds of ego pretty quickly, and that's what one tends to do. The point being is that telepathic interactions, they're transparent. You're interacting, and aliens are very smart. They're certainly smarter than probably most of us would think that we are. But what's interesting is this. Now, this is going to sound strange to some people. When you're interacting in that kind of telepathic network, it's as though sharing of information allows for a much greater kind of, I don't know how to say it, so information capacity goes off of the old scale. And in this kind of remote viewing, remote sensing, it's as though the shifts of information are really fast. It's a lot of energy, a lot of information condensed, subtle in a sense, but you get the overview. You don't get every little detail. And you're kind of resonating out across distances. And in telepathic interactions like that, the potential is just, it's changed. The kind of mind, the kind of interactions, it's as though, you think one person is smart. Well, what do you think about four or five people plus interacting with different aliens? Some of them may be even critical of these Verdants or Greys and that kind of thing and wanting very much to help here because they might not want a large population kind of case coming in and starting to move in this galaxy. Well, the interactions can be, it's as though, scientists have this analogy. If they have one of these kind of interferometer telescopes up on one side of the Earth and one on the other side, the effective size of that telescope is like that whole, maybe could be 20,000 or more than 20,000, many thousands of miles distance between those two. It's something like that when they compare them and use a computer. Well, when you're interacting with other minds, it's not as though you're, 50 million minds in that space. But there's more information capacity, and it's just, it's different, I suppose is the best way to put it. So we're talking about big populations. What happened in my case was in 2004, this group of aliens kind of introduced themselves in a sense, and it's not like they walk into my living room, here they are. It's as though they've been dominating all of this all along. They've been, they're billions of years old. And they essentially sort of demonstrate that it's amazing. It's like they sort of demonstrating that first, so this whole community of mind, and your hair stands up. It's what the amount of awareness, the amount of stuff that's going on, and the subtlety of it. And then this one alien is showing how, what would happen, for example, in my own case, if I had to do a variety of different choices. And it's all looping in time. You see these multiple, all of an instant, multiple sort of eventualities. You imagine something like, I don't want to say parallel universes, but sort of parallel sort of loops in time. And these older aliens, the one group that I became aware of was, again, a large population. I don't want to say like the so-called Verdants, but, again, they later eventually said that they had grown at some point to be one quadrillion. That's double of what imagine 500 trillion is huge. But you could put 500 trillion aliens, the so-called Verdants, in one galaxy, and it sounds like a big number, but you could have only one of their planets around one star, one out of every 600,000-800,000. It's like, one of almost a million would be one of their planets, and you've got their whole, their number of what they say they have some 249,000 planets. You could space it out like that.
Uh-huh.
And so it doesn't mean that they're out there the dominant superpower of the universe. As a matter of fact, they may be sort of a relatively young sort of moving towards the intermediate stage among aliens. Well, these hyper-advanced aliens are much older, and they're more reserved, and they enter the picture, and the Verdants, there have been sort of contentious interactions with Verdants, to say the least. The Verdants just step back because these older aliens really know more stuff. They live longer, they know more, they have better technology, and it's, you kind of awed at first, and then you start to wonder, how much of this are they manipulating on their own? Well, they are so, they appear to interact on a scale, in a sense, with where they interact with a variety of different populations. So they're not limited to this one verdant thing or the verdant gray alignment coming in, but they will sometimes take that perspective. And for example, when we talk about human sexuality, well, they suggest that it's better to be cloning because, you know, you eliminate the territoriality, the aggressiveness. They suggest that humans, you know, could run into trouble if we aren't helped in some way. They suggest a number of things, that if we hadn't interacted with the aliens that the burdens come in with, then we wouldn't know about a lot. You know, there are a lot of things you need to know about with aliens. The critique of that coming in, presumably from other aliens, in some cases, some of these hyper-advanced aliens, is that, well, even if humans reject this incursion or this sort of chance for relations or connection with the grays and their alignment, if we reject them and think, we'll pick our own sort of our interactions, then we will at least have learned about aliens without going over to our next-door neighbor aliens and starting some sort of military, potentially escalating idea of whose technology was what and what they could or could not tell us what to do. So there are a lot of different issues involved in all this. You have to step back. The universe is huge. Entire galaxies merge. The Milky Way will merge in about 3.5 billion years with Andromeda, which is another big spiral galaxy, big and beautiful. And it may form what's called a kind of a round-shaped elliptical galaxy. Well, our galaxy, the Milky Way, as a matter of fact, had already merged. In the past, scientists suggest that the very sun that we live around may have come from a smaller little galaxy that merged into the Milky Way at some point. And so we're sort of new immigrants to this galaxy. Well, it goes on all the time. Galaxies, a certain percentage of galaxies are now merging all around in superclusters and in different places. And the point is that populations mix together. Some stars are thrown into hot areas near the big black holes in these big, big galaxies. Other stars go into places where maybe there's new stars forming. What if you've got a supernova suddenly? You're in a new neighborhood in this galaxy, and there's a supernova that's going to blast. It's going to be hard for you. Does it become a scramble for resources? Is it like not a war, but an emergency situation where they all just sort of, you know, survival of the fittest, whoever gets whatever they want first wins? Or is there a larger sort of convention? Have aliens, it looks to me, and all indications are to me, that older, more advanced aliens will try to prepare populations like us or any other population, will try to sort of move them or help move them towards assimilation, knowing how aliens are, knowing that, well, for example, as far as we know, all aliens that we know about, and this includes everything, you could name, you know, if you want to call them Pleiadians, any kind of alien people have talked about, they're all equalitarian. None of them have rich versus poor. It doesn't mean, at least according to that accounts that we have, that they necessarily share equally from one population to another. Now, that can be a problem, you know, which population thinks that it can make the decisions. You know, it has the older, the more advanced technology. But the point is that, you know, so that's one thing that we need to sort of understand, that it's not an utopian ideal. You know, some people think, Thomas More and whatever, various ideas of that sort, they're fringe things that usually sort of go off into the woods and they never come back. But apparently, you know, the universe is already like that. And that's a kind of real lesson.
Yeah, you've definitely have gone beyond the more I'll call it mundane characteristics of the alien contact scenario, and now you're thinking more about the implications and the agendas and things of that nature, which I think, you know, a lot of people are asking about, and so I think your information is important and very timely, because, you know, people ask me all the time about, you know, are these aliens extraterrestrials? Are they interdimensional beings? Are they time travelers? Or what I answer is they're all the above.
What is
your thought along those lines?
I would say, you know, like Corso suggested, and remember, this is a guy who worked in the Pentagon in what's called the Foreign Technology Desk, and they tried to hide the fact that alien stuff was, quote, foreign, because it was very foreign. He was suggesting that, you know, I mean, he was saying that, you know, the aliens folded gravity around their craft. It's like bending gravity, weird connections, like Einstein and Rosen's idea of like a wormhole through space, but it's it's almost as though aliens have realized that every single atom, this is going to sound weird to some listeners, in the nucleus of every atom, where the deep part, the sort of denser, the heavier mass, whatever you want to call it, the deeper down, it's kind of think of it having a curvature. It's sort of as though that down in there can resonate. It cycles in a sense in a sort of a half. There's a half kind of state where black holes, gravity, and that, and even what's going on in stars, where things, by the way, are also getting more densely put or fused together. It's an inward dynamic. It's a huge, important aspect of the universe. So some of it's going in while it's also expanding at the same time, but the inward can resonate with the outward. It's not as though the universe sort of blows up like a, like an apple hit just exploding out into straight lines. It is curving and it is resonant back into itself, and it's just bizarre, but it's fascinating, and that's apparently why this new kind of instant resonance can occur in this weird science that scientists are apparently finding out about. So this is all happening, and we're seeing. I mean, I'm not the only one who's having these kind of interactions. Other people are having the same interactions, and I encourage people. If you're having those interactions, and you can essentially, it's a kind of like a conversation going on with the aliens. Some people are reluctant to push too far, but I'd say, okay, don't push too far, but nonetheless, probing the term. And you'll find out. Do your own kind of inquiry and actually talk with other people. We need to share information. I'm trying to step back from, it's not about, what we did yesterday, what was on, what happened on Monday Night Football. It's that, here we are at this very important juncture in all of human history. Human history. And I think every human in the past, if they're walking along, you walk up to a peasant, it's be most of my family, I hope, peasants as normal people, and tap them on the shoulder 1,000 years ago and say, look, can you believe this? And they could see where we are and what's going on. There's aliens contact. We're having direct, explicit interactions. We have down technology. There's this race. There's like corruption in certain parts of the military. There's kind of like some of the corrupt elements have tried to use the CIA to hide everything that they do. It's called the CIA. Michael Sala writes about the CIA Act of 1949, which was allowed the CIA to borrow, to essentially use funds from other agencies without respect or without any regard for what their stated intent was. So the CIA essentially can use billions. There's this area it's called the Groom Air Base, Area 51, mm-hmm. all Relate. That. That mm-hmm. was CIA for years was running that. And that way, sure. Stuff could go on and there's nobody could question it and stuff could happen because the money is coming from places nobody knows about. And the question is if some of that money is even from illegal activities, like the Barry Seal case and that kind of thing. Well, all this stuff is going on, and we have to sort of step back and sort of get a handle on what's going on. Would you really want to have, for example, would it be smart to have aliens having bases here on this planet? Would that be a good idea? The question to me is like, if they did, how would you get them out if they're already abducting and doing whatever they darn well please, according to some of the stories that we have from interesting people like William Cooper and other people who have suggested mm-hmm. the same. There may have been some sort of agreement, almost a fallback, where they didn't have any power. Corso talked about it, where the military or people in government thought, well, they're abducting, and at least if they tell us what's going on for a while here, we what can we do? They're sort of stuck. But it got out of hand, and that's the point. If you have aliens basing on your planet, when are you going? How could you say, "Well, you have to leave," and they're underground, and you can't even see them going into those places?
Chambers. Let me ask you a question here, because we've got a few moments here, and then we're going to have to exit for our next group here. But anyway, what compelled you at this point to come out with your book?
Well, I realized that I had direct interaction and that I could write. If I had not had direct interactions, then, just so much of it, this sounds weird to some people, thousands of hours, but it's not like thousands of hours, like I'm all the time talking back and forth. It's mm-hmm. sometimes like they post something, I post something, a more advanced alien comes into it, and it really has got the run of the whole thing. And everybody else is listening. They're not sort of head-on, sort of clunky, really weird argument sort of qualities. They're like, who knows more? And who's really sort of, really got amazing capabilities. And I realized that I could write a book about this and talk about how it feels, a lot of the exchanges, interaction, this, how this would be approached, how that would be approached, some of the characteristics, and I know it from firsthand experience, and there are many other people who've had interactions too, so I realized it's time to write a book of this sort to look at not only how aliens exist from a few interactions or a few accounts, like from A to B, us and them, us and them, but really what's it like among them, between them? How is their life among them? And we mm-hmm. don't know everything, so we have a lot. We need to fill in some of the details, but we know enough now to definitely, certainly put together a book, and my book is, I suppose, one of the early attempts at it, but I'm sure there'll be more.
So how can people get your book?
Well, you can. There's a website I have. It's called alienmindbook.org, and you can read it free on there. My website has been a little buggy for the past few days. I don't know why. Or you can read it. You can get it on Amazon. Just the title of the book is called Alien Mind, or some of, I think Amazon, it may even be on Barnes & Noble, but certainly on Amazon. You can read it free on my website if you want. So either
yeah, way. And I'll spell your last name just so that people know how to find you. It's spelled Lobuono, George Lobuono.
Yes, if you speak Spanish, Lobuono, the good thing
is Lobuono.
It's Italian, Lobuono. It's the same.
That's more Italian, I guess, that way.
It is Italian, yeah. Part of the family is from Italy.
Right, right.
So the book, you know, what I would say is this. I'm writing a second book now, and that book is like the next step in a sense. It's like how we can now make our own choice of interactions in a mixed community of aliens. We don't have to be herded and
right.
told or forced, compelled to only interact with one group of aliens. Because, again, as I was outlining, the science is already there. Anyone can do this. It's not just weird people, or it's not just people who've had only interactions with aliens or technology people. It's anyone listening to this.
Well, George, I want to thank you so much for coming on my show this evening. And I'd certainly like to have you back when you're ready to talk about your second book. But in the meantime, good luck to you. And I don't know if you've been asked to come down here to the MUFON meeting in San Jose, but that's where the main MUFON meetings are in Northern California. So
yes,
we'd love to have
fact,
you speak here.
Ruben said, yeah, he'd like to have me down for a presentation.
Great.
And yep, I'd love to do that. I think my next presentation is probably going to be kind of a newly packaged version, so it'll be the kind
beautiful.
Of
beautiful. Okay.
I'm there.
Well, again, thank you so much, everybody, for listening to Beyond Belief. I'm your host, Les Velez, and we'll see you in a month with another great guest like we had tonight. Thank you again, George.
Good night.
Good night.
Thank you for joining us on History FM Radio on liveparanormal.com and history.fm. From paranormal to the unexplained history, it all happens here. Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in live interactive chat 24/7 with our radio show hosts and other like-minded people on www.liveparanormal.com. The only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interactive Media. Stop by now and join in on the fun.